right, here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on a Monday. Lots of news to get to. Write to us. Please give the teeny tiny lady something to do. MyNorthwest.com. We do love to hear from you. One of you also gets a chance to be letter of the day. You text as well. 1-888-973-5476. Lots to talk about. Whoa,
what a mess.
That's cold. Colin Powell, Tom, passes away at the age of 84.
84. I didn't realize he was as old as that. He was very, you know, fit. I mean, he looked very...
Well, he's a military guy, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I hadn't seen him on television in a long time. And he was involved in various other projects recently after leaving public office and sort of the public place. And he developed, was diagnosed with a type of cancer, I think, back in 2018.
Myeloma.
Or something. Yeah, myeloma. And it weakened his immune system. He had been vaccinated, but... when you get a bad bad immune system, there's not much you can do even with a vaccine. So he succumbs to that, and now of course you hear from everybody talking about Colin Powell and what he did. Here is Kamala Harris. I believe she's still the vice president.
You know, he is the first black man to be Joint Chiefs, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to be National Security Advisor, to be Secretary of State. Every step of the way, when he filled those roles, he was, by everything that he did and the way he did it, inspiring so many people. And there's been a lot of conversation about that, how young service members and others, not only in the military, but in our nation and around the globe, took notice of what his accomplishments meant as a reflection of who we are as a nation. And I think that's one of the most important things to take away, which is that he broke so many barriers, and those barriers were not easy to break by any stretch, but he did it with dignity, he did it with grace, and because of what he was able to accomplish, it really did elevate our nation in so many ways. So may he rest in peace.
Okay, well, you hear about defense, you hear about Austin or Chris Wallace talking about it or anything
else?
The
interesting thing for Lloyd Austin is that he now is an African-American sort of in his footsteps, in Colin Powell's footsteps. I don't know what he said. I don't know if there's anything surprising about it, but clearly he was a trailblazer for people like Lloyd Austin.
Mm-hmm. Did Colin Powell get the job because he's black?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the question that you have. I don't think I haven't heard anybody else asking that question. He started, you know, early on, and he was impressive at each step of the way. He was he served in Vietnam in 1962. I mean, that was before Vietnam was even a much of a controversy. So, I mean, he's been around in a long time. I don't have any inside information.
He received, by the way, 3 votes for president in 2016 from the great state of Washington.
Is that right? Well, I know, you know, both parties.
Three of the unfaithful said, go, we want him. They say he would have beaten, when he made the decision not to run against Bill Clinton. They said that in the White House at the time when he went on television, there were smiles and cheers because a poll had him winning by, I think, 14. And then the day of the election, they did another poll and he would have beaten Clinton by like 20 or 30. If there's a great, interesting piece in the National Review, take a look at it. It's pretty, you'd like it, Tom. If he had run, how it would have changed the country. So it's just sort of the domino effect. If he would have won, he's pro-abortion. So then might have split the party. Then Pat Buchanan might have actually won because he pulled votes away from Republicans and from Clinton. You could have a third party, or he could have run as a third party. There would have been no George Bush. There would have been, and there might have been more control over our defense. There might have been no 9/11. There would have been no Donald Trump as the last thing. There would have been no Barack Obama. He walked through all of it to go through the whole thing to say how he would have changed America if he had decided. Now, of course, that's all hypothetical. If he had decided to run against Bill Clinton, win, and then even 2000, they asked him again, You want to run. You want. He's just. I don't have the taste for politics. So,
but what the interesting thing is. So yeah, both parties. So he was for the longest time. He declared himself an independent when he was in the military. Mm-hmm. He then declared himself after he left the military that he was a Republican. And then in the last couple of elections, he endorsed Barack Obama. And then his emails revealed that he couldn't stand Donald Trump. So he became more of like a Democrat, even though I don't think he ever changed his party affiliation. The amazing thing about him. And again, I completely understand this because he was always on the sidelines. Both Republicans and Democrats tried to lure him to their side as a possible candidate. And he, the one thing I wasn't sure of, except until I was reading this, he took that possibility very seriously. He seriously considered running for president. And then he decided not to. And I think he's smart not to. You always look better when you're on the sidelines.
Oh,
Once you get into the fray, you're muddied up with everybody else. And I don't think that he would have the standing that he did or does if he had gotten into it, because his personality, I know you were kind of smirking, I think, when you heard Kamala Harris talk about, but you know, his dignity and grace are not the kinds of things that usually win elections, and he'd have to kind of change and become a little more pugnacious, I think, to actually to run. So I don't know where you stand on Colin Powell. In general, to me, and he admitted this, and he wrote this autobiography about, he thinks he had one blot on his career, and that's when he went before the United Nations and
used
this evidence that turned out to be bogus about the fact that that Saddam Hussein actually had nuclear weapons and all of this stuff, and he was embarrassed by that. But for me, as a good Democrat, John, I like the fact that he glommed on to Barack Obama's campaign, and he had a distaste for Trump. Since those aren't your politics, do you have a kind of a sour taste in your mouth when it comes to?
No, I always liked him. I read his book, and I remember reading a really incredible piece when he was going through. And I only know this because I used to live there in Woodbridge, Virginia, and he stopped to use the gas station. It was like 1978 or something, and the guy wouldn't let him use the gas station. Wouldn't let him use the bathroom.
He's black.
I was like, wow, in Virginia, Northern Virginia. I always liked the guy. I don't know if he was really into Obama. I know that he certainly he had a great distaste for Donald Trump, and he said, I've left the Republican Party after Trump got in there. But God love him. He served the country and did well for himself and his family. And you're right, Tom. Listen, when you wrestle pigs, both you and the pigs get muddy. I mean, nobody comes into politics and runs for president and still maintains to be graceful with dignity. It doesn't exist. And we've only elected a couple of generals like that, right? We've had Eisenhower.
Ulysses S. Grant, who was
George Washington.
Terrible. George Washington.
Yep.
Andrew Jackson.
Yes. So I don't know where we would be if we had Colin Powell, but it's a really interesting piece in the National Review looking ahead. Let's say the Pike Place Market is and its vendors in COVID, and the lockdown has continued to cripple Pike Place Market. And I saw that Seattle had the greatest drop off in tourism. We led the country in the decline of tourists coming here in 2000. It's slowly starting to crawl back up again.
Yeah.
But still, cities that are in the hotel business that is in depression and recession. In depression, there are 8 of them, and Seattle, San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and New York are all in a depression, the others in a recession. So still haven't gotten back up to 2019 numbers, but this piece in the Seattle Times takes a look at how difficult it is for vendors to continue to make a living there at Pike Place Market. It would seem to me, because a lot of the business that goes in there and buys stuff are tourists that are coming in and spending time. Of course, you go to Pike Place Market. So how many locals are going down there? I can't imagine that many.
All the cruise ship activity, which, was done for 18 months. That was, I don't know if it was the lifeblood of the market, but it was certainly the profit lifeblood of the market. It was interesting, just like we've said on practically every industry, the pandemic accelerated problems or trends that were there before the pandemic. For instance, they were mentioning that one of the issues about Pike Place Market is, I mean, when I was growing up, Pike Place Market was like the only place where you could go get kind of fresh produce like that. Now, with so many farmers markets in just about every little neighborhood around Seattle, that's no longer the draw. There has to be other things to draw you down. The Seattle Times does a really nice job of kind of profiling. So who's back and who isn't? They start off with a guy who's selling flowers. And he says, and business actually has been pretty darn good for him. Why is that? Because the other four flower vendors didn't come back.
Yeah.
And so he says, so personally, it works out for me. The question, though, is if there are so few vendors left, and we'll have to see how many eventually come back. But with few vendors, the vendors that are there are doing pretty good business. But ultimately, it might not be a big enough attraction to bring people there at all. And maybe the few that are now buying all of his flowers may stop coming. I'm assuming they assume a bounce back, but they do say that it has kind of culled the field a lot. Uh-huh. And until the economy is back booming, they really wonder about Pike Place Market, how well it will survive. It might have to survive on kind of a lower level basis than it has in the past, and it's already been tough on them anyway.
Yeah, the vendor that normally throws the fish, he says, I don't do that anymore. I don't do a show. It's just me by myself. I don't have people coming in buying $500 worth of fish. They're buying oysters, this and that, and clams, but they're not buying the big setup. So he doesn't even bother doing the big setup. If you don't have the tourists coming in, the conventions that Seattle really relies upon, if you don't have those people, because you could see them, they're all kind of coming through, eyes all ogly, and they look at a few, maybe they pick up a few souvenirs. That seemed to be the lifeblood of Pike Place Market. Well, they're not coming in town, or if they do come in town, I don't know how safe they necessarily feel. I looked up last night, how safe is it to be in Seattle? And it was backpackers.com. So it was like, if going through, it's a cool city, this and that, but certainly do watch yourself. There are certain sections of the city that I wouldn't go into at night. The guy was giving advice. So I don't know. Do you think you want to go down to Pike Place Market in the dark in that area? That's a really nasty area now at night. And I don't think you necessarily want to go over there and risk your life.
The market tends not to be open, though, at the late hours. I mean, they close around, dinner time. So I'm not, at least in this analysis by the Seattle Times, no one mentions, safety is an issue or a concern. Now it might be a concern if you have a restaurant, down there, what kind of traffic you get after dark. But for them, one of the other interesting things about the article, John, is they talk about how people have adapted. They mentioned this, this one restaurant, Soundview Cafe, and they decide to re-engineering their menu, that they got rid of a lot of these complicated high-end items. So now they have a more cost-efficient menu. They take the six or seven things that are their biggest sellers or their biggest profit generators, and they just focus on that. So there's been a lot of kind of a, I don't know if it's a reducing the business, but kind of like making for a more efficient business model in a lot of their just like a lot of the places, the vendors that sell vegetables, they are also farming their stuff out to the neighborhood farming markets, so they're not entirely dependent on a Pike Place Market, and that could change it forever.
And the same thing is happening apparently in the used car market, according to the Wall Street Journal. Used cars in the era of chip shortage, online chats and no more haggling, that there are people that have gotten out of the used car business. Those that are in it stay in it, and there's not as much competition, and they're still doing quite well, and also there's a limited supply. So you come in, you really don't have as much bargaining power as you had before. So now the world of selling used cars,
And new cars
as well. So there's not as many dealers, there's not as many salesmen, so people are doing better in that business.
And, John, the interesting thing is they don't even necessarily come in. No. More and more, 75% of business is now done online. And so what they do finally do, and they can even deliver your car if that you want to, but they say that a lot of times now all they do is they come in to finalize the sale and then pick up the car right then. That's how it's arranged. And I was thinking about you, although you have any other opportunities, but you have the perfect personality for a car salesman. You've got charisma. Charisma, self-confidence.
I could never do that. No.
Really? And it says it helps to have a big personality. You know, what do you mean? If you can sell medical equipment, for Pete's sake,
that people, Tom, sell people a car. Need bedpans.
Oh, so you're only pushing something you believe in? How
no, not that
you,
I believe
John?
In it. It's just much easier to sell something that, listen, I could beat somebody on price or sell bedpans, cotton balls, needles, and syringes. That's easy. And the guy's coming in for the car. You know, you see what they drive in so that you can then say, I'll offer you X for your trade-in. There's so many little maneuvers that they're doing to get you in the car and then upgrade you in this and then that and that. They take you in the other room and they basically, you know, grind you down. You know, talk to your sales. Then you talk to the bank guy. Then like five hours later, you're just like so tired. You're like, whatever. Oh, you want to get insurance? All the little odds and ends in order to make an additional $400 or $500. Yeah. I can't stand that.
You're not a detailed man.
No. It's not the detail. And I don't want to fight somebody. Some guy comes in. Yeah, I saw the invoice. Listen, I didn't have to do that kind of fighting stuff. Selling medical supplies. Someone has to go. Tinky, they need a place to tinky. That used to say that on the side of our trucks.
It.
And I was selling a Bemis. Well, you know the Bemis building down there in Seattle?
Yeah.
B-E-M-I-S.
Okay.
Bemis bedpans.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And
I think
now
that's where
you
that
know
came from.
The rest of the story. By the way, though, John, all those factors that I thought would make you a great salesman, they're saying they're becoming irrelevant. Today, the roles... They're looking for tech-savvy people with analytic skills for being able to use the computer to figure out what this person really needs and all this. So all those kind of big personalities that are caricatured on, you know, in movies and TV shows about what a car salesman's really like, now they're becoming, you know, nerdier, I guess. They're more analytical and tech-savvy. So that would also rule you out. And
my friend Michael Whalen could never, didn't sell one car. He worked for 3 months. Somebody lady came in and she, I want to get this, I'm going to get that. And he goes, you know what you need? You know what you need? You don't need this car. You know what you need to do? You need to go home and think about how great your life is. Is this your daughter? She's like, yeah. Yeah, beautiful daughter. You need to go home. You don't need a car. You know what you need to do? You need some time alone just to look at how great your life is. And the woman's like, can I get somebody to sell me a car? She goes, you're the weirdest sales technique. He goes, no, I'm just telling you. You don't need this. You don't need this car. Oh, my God. He was horrible.
He should put his shingle up and become a therapist.
That's what he could have done. All right. Tracy Taylor's looking at traffic for Russ on a Monday. Here we go. Okay. Well, it's Donald Trump. One thing he did do, Tom, he made dishwashers more effective. 98% of people that bought dishwashers were demanding that the White House or the federal government are here to help you. They created a dishwasher that had two cycles on it. You could either do the one that would use more water and use more energy, or you could use less, because prior to that, the Obama administration made these things more fuel efficient, more energy efficient, but they didn't work as well. And people complained you had to run the thing twice or pull it out of there and then do them by hand. They're just such a, it just didn't effectively didn't work. Plus also the other thing that went into place was the shower heads didn't give you enough water. And I remember one time, I think we even played this cut. This is from a while ago. This is the president talking. I think this is when he was running for president. Was this in 2020?
Yeah, no, this is 2015.
2015. Yeah.
How about the shower? You go into a shower, and I have this beautiful head of hair. I need a lot of water. And you go into the shower, right? You turn on the water, drip.
Did you ever think a president would get that amount, or a candidate that amount of applause for a head of hair?
Drip.
Trump, yes.
Drip.
Yes. Drip.
I call the guy, is something wrong with this? No, sir, it's just the restrictor. So you're in there five times longer than you're supposed to be. You use probably more water, and it's a very unpleasant experience, right? So we're getting rid of the restrictors. You're going to have full shower flow.
Woo!
Full sink.
That's why he won. Get showers, less dripping. And then he also allowed them to get different dishwashers. And then Joe Biden steps back in again, and he's told to sign here, here, and here. And he does, and returns dishwashers back to their inefficiency. And I think shower heads are going back to drip, drip, drip. So
well, no, they're more efficient. So this is the question.
It's efficient, it's how? Kind of,
environmental battle. This is good for the environment, so we want to use appliances that don't waste water and use up more energy. Now, the one thing that we can't, that I can't, you know, verify one way or the other is if it was true, and I don't think it is, my hunch is it isn't, but what Donald Trump and the Republicans and National Review and everybody else says is that in the instance of the dishwasher, that if it's inefficiently cleaning the dishes and you have to do it a second time, then that uses more water. If you can demonstrate that to me, that it actually uses more water, not less, that it doesn't, can't do the job, I don't know that that's true, but that's the contention. Now, with the shower heads, I don't really understand that. I mean, it seems to me my shower head, you know, is plenty strong. I don't know if that's an exaggeration or if there are really people who can't get, you know, a good head of hair out of the shower heads they have. That'd have to be demonstrated. But right now, I think it's just a battle between the environmentalists who want us to try to, you know, preserve. It's like needing to have a lawn. You water your lawn if you have a water shortage, and with all the droughts in this country, that seems environmentally responsible to maybe not water your lawn. I think that's a version of this, but I understand if you feel like I can't get the dang shampoo or conditioner out of my hair, that would be a problem, or my dishes aren't clean enough. That's what's in dispute, I think, ultimately.
Right, but ultimately, does the customer use it twice? That's the big question. The government says, here, we're going to give you this thing, and it's going to save, but then you have to do it twice. And the same thing, are you in the shower twice as long? Well, why did people complain about it? Obviously, it wasn't working effectively. It wasn't a political thing. Dishes wasn't a political, the dishes are Republican or Democrat. No, a dirty dish is a dirty dish. And if it's not cleaning effectively, and the government says, no, these are the machines you have to use, because look at this, it's going to save you. But then it doesn't save me because you have to do it twice.
Well,
it doesn't work. Right?
I don't know. I don't have the numbers. I don't think there was a groundswell of people up in arms. There were maybe people that complained, like they complained about every appliance in the house. I don't know there was a groundswell. I think this tied into the deregulation push within the Republican Party. So it's a political matter. Whether it's actually, you know, the case in reality, I don't know. But yeah, if you don't like regulations, you know, then this is just one more regulation. It's like when we went, you know, we got those new energy efficient light bulbs. Well, yeah, you know, even it's not as bright, those halogen things. Where's that old fashioned filament, you know, that they were brighter. But if it's good for the environment, you get used to it and you adjust.
You don't get as much light, but hey, you're saving the environment.
Yes. Oh, I mean, that's
so
the
it doesn't
argument.
Work. You'd be doing even better with no light or, you know, or nothing.
Well, yes. It's always a balance, John.
Right. Well, if you have to use the thing twice. So in this case, the shower heads and the dishwashers and all the other stuff will become, quote unquote, more efficient because the federal government says it is. It's the same thing with ethanol in gas. It doesn't help at all the amount of energy that you use in order to grow the corn, the amount of energy it takes to transport and then to convert the corn into fuel and then inject it into your car and then have your car not run as well. But hey, it's too late now because now we have all this corn being grown. We have to put it in there. And even though it doesn't really do anything for you, it gives you the impression it does. But ultimately, in the end, it ends up being a net loss to the economy. But again, the federal government thought it was a good idea. Sounds good. Looks good on paper. So in this case, we go back to this is just going to be one more thing that'll hang around Joe Biden's neck. You got Afghanistan. You got inflation. You have Hunter Biden.
Heads.
And you got shower
I
heads.
I think so.
Well, right, listen, when people get upset, you know, who are they going to look towards? It's the government upsets them about little teeny tiny things. It starts to all add up. The one thing that Joe Biden is taking a knock on the chin on is the fact that the price of gas has gone up almost a dollar across the country. And for a variety of reasons, gas has gone up across the country. Joe Biden has made phone calls to OPEC and to frackers and to others saying, hey, is there something you can do in order to be able to help me bring down the cost of gas? Because he knows this is a real whack in the wallet for people. And they always vote with their pocketbooks. But you can't give total blame doesn't go to the Biden administration, although there's a little bit in there that they could possibly do. Will they open the reserves? They have millions of gallons of reserves to help lower the price, but that would only be a temporary. The big question is, does this inflation and does gas continue to rise for the next year? Because any Democrat, any Republican sitting there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, he knows that that's the big issue that people have when it comes to keeping the position you have. It's your pocketbook. People vote with that all the time.
Oh, yeah, believe me. That's why I think that Biden is trying to scramble to figure out a way to lower those. It's, you know, it's one thing if they're individual items that are more expensive in a grocery store, you can maybe, you know, pick and choose. But when it comes to gasoline, it's not like you have plenty of options.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then the other one is that gas, and if you're going to be heating your house, well, the price of oil, price of gas.
That's predicted to go way up, too.
Way up for wintertime. Yeah. So not so good. And again, if the price of gas was coming down, would you give him credit for it? If the price of gas is going up, does he take the blame? It's always the case. It's too simple, but that's the way that people look at those things. All right, speaking of gas and people using it on the highways, are they using a lot sitting there? Are they going anywhere? Up, 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 up. All right, we will get to Seahawks. We'll talk about that. Tom's still licking his wounds over the Hawks and the Huskies. I got a call from my neighbor, and quick audible here, Tom.
Okay.
They said Gina and Braden would like to drive away in your 1966 Ford F-100 if you would be so kind to let them do that. They're going to tie cans to the back of it, if that's okay. I was like, oh, my gosh, I would be honored. Now, understand, old cars have a tendency to not exactly just start right away. There's a bunch of stuff you got to do, like you make sure this thing's in place. You got to jiggle the key a little bit, and then you got to pump the thing twice, the gas twice. Then you have to, like, jiggle the key one more time, and then you got to turn it and then wait. I mean, you know, all the little weird idiosyncrasies of an old car that you kind of pick up along the way. Oh, I see. If I have my arm slightly out the window, it'll start. So, I mean, that's the way these trucks are, right? So I give them the truck, but first I clean her up. Her name is Dottie. I vacuum. I pull so much dog hair out of there. I made another dog on Saturday afternoon. So now three dogs. So I drop the thing off. It looks great. I park it there, go to the wedding, and I do the Irish exit, which is basically you just leave without saying goodbye. And I went into town, but I felt so guilty. Like, oh, I got to make sure the truck starts, because how a horrible experience. The beginning of your marriage, the beginning of your on your wedding day, all the cans tied to the back. It doesn't start, right? Because when you take the jumper cables out of a car, that's when it dies. So I took the jumper cables out because it would make the car look good. And there it is sitting there. From what I understand, they get in the car, they look beautiful, and then they go to start the thing. And do you have it? I'm trying to recreate this. Sean, do you have the sound of it starting or not starting? You turn in the key. Yep. Anyways, that's exactly what, yeah, there you go. So, and it'll start, but then yeah, it stops. So you have to. Now it starts, but don't. Oh, then you got to yell out, like, suddenly you be. So everyone's like yelling stuff out, like, give it more gas! Give it, yeah, there, go, you got it! Jingle the handle! Now it's going! Okay, start it up now! Okay. Turn the key, and bring the. Now put it in. It's like this is what it's like. So finally, after 3 minutes, you flooded it. They're like, wait, now you gotta wait a minute. Let it drain out of the carburetor. And they're like waiting. Then it takes off and goes down the road. And it's like, oh my god, thank you. But the story was, they said, no, they were quite happy. You know, it just doesn't bode well for a beginning of on your wedding day to be clunking.
Bad omen. Our relationship stalled on the runway.
But the car looked good, and everyone's like, yeah. Oh, that's a nice car. That's a nice truck, because they're all looking at the truck, and they wanted to get that nice picture of them driving away. And the thing's like, sure. Kaboom, kaboom, bang, bong.
Just get a still shot. Don't worry about the movie part of it. Make a still shot. It'll look great.
So why we got the window waving?
Who are they to you that they would know you and ask for something so personal?
Oh, that's Al and Lynette.
Just a guy you met?
They live down the street, Tom.
Yeah, that's perfect. So a neighbor. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
wow, you know, Cleella must be great.
It is. It was a great, wonderful wedding.
Uh-huh.
And
you skipped out on halfway through.
No, I don't skip out. There's an old expression.
What did you call it, an Irish accent?
Well, the Jews say goodbye, but they never leave. The Irish never say goodbye, but they leave. Like if a Jewish guy comes to your house, the husband and wife say, we had a great time. Thanks for inviting us. We got to do this again. This is so amazing. Next time I'm going to make sure that Margaret and David are here because the house looks beautiful. The kids are great. They've all grown. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Hey, listen, remember, next Friday we're going to have you over. And then when you come over, David is going to have a great big thing. We'll have a huge thing and everyone's going to have a great thing. So the Jews say goodbye but never leave. But the Irish just like, hey, have you seen... Hey, where's Michael and... have you seen those guys? Yeah, they boo you leave. It's called the Irish exit. You don't know the Irish exit?
I think I have heard that in the past, but maybe only from you.
No, when you go, like you're at a party, do you walk around and, thanks for inviting us. It's so nice to see. Do you do that whole thing?
I mean, to the host, not to anybody else usually, but to the host. I try to seek out the host just to let them know I'm taking off.
Okay. Do you do that, Tracy?
Or maybe...
What? Do I just automatically disappear all the time?
There you go.
All the time.
Why is that?
Because, it's not, I don't know. For me, it's just kind of like I was there. I saw everybody. I talked to everybody. And now it's time to go. So why make it any longer than it needs to be?
Maybe
is that bad? Is that bad? Well, no. I mean, I do. I usually send them a text later that night and say, thanks for having us. But, I mean, I just disappear.
Yeah. All right. The Irish exit. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You should have accompanied John to the wedding.